Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, the folk fiddle sounds of Big Sadie, and 12-year-old theater critic Ada Gray. Now, here's your host, a man who has already complained about the heat three times today, Justin Kaufman.
Yes. It's too hot. You know, I just don't understand it. I wish it was 50 and rainy. Oh, Chicago. It's just too much. It's too sunny. What happened to the overcast? That's what we love about Chicago. Grass is always greener. What a beautiful night tonight here in Chicago. I'm just kidding, of course. I'm in jest. Not really complaining about the weather, folks. I'm enjoying it just like you. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. Oh, my gosh. It is bustling right here in the Michigan Avenue studios tonight. I mean, it really is. Like in the last 2 days, last night we had J.C. Brooks and J.C. Brooks Band in Studio 435. There were, Pete, correct me if I'm wrong, there were probably about 50, 60 people out here watching the performance. So it's kind of a night.
At least 50.
There's a point. Like, I mean, a lot of times it's funny because we'll be doing a sound check, and obviously that's during the commercial break, or and people will stand and watch, and they can't hear it.
But then they're like, the hip and knee center as
yeah. They're very interested in the hip and knee center, and then they go, well, I saw them perform, but I didn't hear them, and they walk away. But there were so many people out here last night. It was an amazing night before the rains came, and tonight it looks to be the same. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. If you're getting out on the porch, if you're doing what I did today, mulching, went over to the Home Depot, got myself some mulch, mulched up the front, gave it a brown mulch look. Just love the word mulch. Maybe you're mulching the yard. Maybe you're grilling out tonight. Maybe you're just enjoying a good old Long Island iced tea on the porch. We got you tonight. We're riding shotgun till 11 o'clock. We've got a great show. Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor is going to join us, talk about summer jobs. The On the Table series from Chicago Community Trust is today. This, you may have seen this on social media, or maybe you're invited, or maybe you're doing it right now, but restaurants and community centers and museums and all sorts of places are hosting conversations today. That's part of On the Table. It's the fourth year that the Chicago Community Trust has put this on. They have so many different people from around the city and the suburbs that are essentially hosting conversations. And they will provide them money for the food, and maybe you do it at a restaurant, but they're talking about their community and the idea and sharing ideas and getting to know one another. It isn't necessarily bring your friends out, have some wings and enjoy. Talk about the Cubs. No, the idea is that you invite people that maybe you don't know or that live in the same area, but you might have a different viewpoint, and you have a conversation about ideas and what you can do to better your community. So we're going to have our own tonight here on the download, the On the Table. We've got three people coming in studio. Dan Ash is going to be here. Sol Flores, the executive director at La Casa Norte. Otis Monroe, the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. We'll talk about Chicago and what they think the priorities are for the future. What are the biggest issues facing communities? Let's talk about it. It's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. I mean, it's fitting, right? On the Table, Big Table. Do it up. Big Sadie's going to be here. The Americana Band has their debut album release party at the Hideout on Friday. So they're going to be performing live. Get a little upright bass and acoustic guitar. I've been mentioning fiddle all day, and I'm like, I'm not sure where the fiddle comes in. And you can hear the fiddle in the songs, but when you break down the actual band, there's not a lot of fiddle. There's an acoustic, and they're going to be acoustic tonight. But so hopefully I'll be justified. You know, maybe they'll bring the fiddle in, and I'll be like, oh, it's a fiddle band. Because I just think I'm a little bit off on the description of Big Sadie. I think I told Rome, like, it's a fiddle band. I'm not sure if they have a fiddle. Also, public school, an art exhibit that is at the Hyde Park Art Center. We'll talk with them, including 12-year-old theater critic Ada Gray. She'll be my guest tonight. We'll talk about her life. She reviews shows in Chicago. And we're not talking about children's shows. We're talking Goodman, Steppenwolf, Shakespeare. And she has a loyal following at her blog. And she's a, I want to say theater critic in training, but she's past training. He's a really thought. You should look it up. Ada Gray, a Chicago blog theater critic. And it's pretty good. She's pretty good. So we'll talk to her. She'll be a guest as well tonight. And the worst, we'll play the worst tonight where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martyr, Esmeralda Leon tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, we got a huge show lined up tonight. It's going to be tight. So why don't we get it started with the carryout? Here today is top stories. The White House continues the peculiar style of denying the story one day and then justifying it the next. Yesterday, officials played Sudoku with the truth as NSA Advisor General H.R. McMaster's denied the story by saying that it was false, but the details were true. It's weird. Today, General McMaster's and the White House are saying, hey, so what? So we shared some intel because we believe in fighting terrorism. So if you don't like it, then the terrorists have already won. USA, USA. You can hear it trickle off. The press are quick to point out that no law was broken when President Trump allegedly passed along classified information in his meeting with Russian officials last week. But critics point to trust and how we have to put the intelligence community in mind as they were put in a bind, as some European countries are already wondering aloud through anonymous sources whether or not to trust the Trump administration with sensitive information. Also, General H.R. McMaster, what a name. Is he the NSA advisor or a character made up by Sid and Marty Krofft? Right? Like, I didn't know that was the full way that now he's on the scene, you know, when he was picked to replace Michael Flynn. I'm like, oh, McMaster, that's a fine name. General H.R. McMaster. That's hardcore. That's puffin' stuff style. Anyway, now that was a 48-hour scandal. So let's move on, shall we? Today, the New York Times reporting that FBI Director James Comey drafted a memo saying that Trump told him to stop investigating Michael Flynn and the Russian ties. This, of course, would be highly unethical and worse than any Loretta Lynch tarmac business. The White House denies it today, which probably means that they'll double down tomorrow with something or other about how they had to, and terrorism and fake news and USA, USA. As a matter of fact, I think we have the exclusive statement from McMaster's on what he's going to say tomorrow.
Isn't this an indictment of our entire American society? Well, you can do what you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen!
You know he's going to do it. 0.0 grade point average. Chicago area man who punched a security guard after throwing up in front of a building this weekend has surrendered and apologized. If you haven't seen this video, good morning. How was your 36-hour nap? You want some OJ, some coffee? Can I get you anything? No, here's the deal. A man was drunk throwing up. A female security guard came out and tried to help him and told him to get out. So naturally, you do what anyone would do in that situation. You clock the woman in the face. Jeez. Cops say it's just a misdemeanor. Hey, but you know what? We've all been there, right? I mean, we all at one time in our lives have thrown up against the side of a River North condo building. It's a rites of passage, really, for frat boys who moved here from Ohio State. But punching a female security guard in the face, that's like punching Chicago. The judge could send this dude back to whatever Big Ten school or commercial real estate job this guy crawled out of, and we'd be okay with it. Not to mention the Chance the Rapper hat, which just makes Chance the Rapper go, why did I do merchandise? Why did I even do that? Why did I choose to put out hats? I should have just stayed with the White Sox hat. An Australian millionaire suggests that the reason millennials are still living at home and not able to afford buying houses is because of avocados. Yep. Essentially, millennials should be saving money, not spending money on frivolous brunches and avocado toast. Yeah, he said this. Hello, I don't know if they have avocado toast down under, but it is worth it. I'd much rather have a mimosa and an avocado toast than a starter condo in Uptown. I'm just saying. Think about it. But maybe the millionaire is right, though. From here on out, millennials, you got to save money and not get distracted by luxury. A Nutella cafe is coming to Chicago. I'm going like every day. I got to text my millennial friends, Todd and Casey. They're going to love this. Bill Cosby did a rare interview today where he claimed racism could have played a role in the sexual misconduct cases against him. Upon hearing this, the ghost of Johnny Cochran was like, why did I die? I would have made so much money defending this guy. to Cosby's defense, there really isn't a defense, so why not just go for the race card, right? In weather, Chicago summer, boy, have we missed you. Is there anything better than an 85-degree day in Chicago? I mean, I guess it was cool. I wish it was cooler, just a little bit cooler. In sports, the Sox lost last night. They've now lost 7-9. They're 2 games under .500. Tonight, they try and right the ship and stay in this series with Anaheim. Derek Holland's on the mound to take on Mike Trout and the Angels. Who's on the Angels these days? Jared Weaver still there? What about Chili Davis? Chili Davis still on the Angels? Rod Carew? Maybe a Bobby Grich? No Bobby Grich? He's not on the Angels anymore? The Cubbies play the next 20 of 26 games at Wrigley starting right now. They have the set with the Reds tonight. The Reds have a lead on the Cubs in the Central and a lead in this game, 1-0 in the first inning. Everyone's chasing the Cardinals, though. Still not sure how long Ian Happ stays up in the majors, but he's in center field tonight. Let's hope the Cubs start winning again under .500 for the third time this year as opposed to never last year. David Ross, affectionately known as Grandpa Rossi, is heading to the ship once again. Last year it was baseball, this year dancing. He's a finalist for Dancing with the Stars. Well, at least one of the 2016 Cubs is winning. I just realized we didn't talk about the Bears rookie minicamp yesterday. It's over. And the best part, no injuries. Only the Bears do you have to worry about injuries in non-contact rookie minicamps, because it's getting closer to that time of year when our phones notify us of season-ending injuries, right? Although last week when I saw the headline that Whiteout Kevin White's car was stolen, was I wrong to think, yeah, but at least he's not out for the year? Did he twist his knee? Didn't twist his knee getting carjacked? I have to admit, doing the show every night, I didn't pay much attention to national sports. So that being said, what's going on with Steve Kerr? Am I just missing that? He's out for the whole playoffs? And why? He's not playing, right? He's just a coach? Is it because it's a back issue? Is that what it is? Pete knows. I'm so confused because I saw a clip of him in the Golden State locker room with a sweatshirt on. So he's available for halftime adjustments, but not suiting up and coaching on the sideline? I mean, they are folding chairs. I guess that's... Hey, feel better, Steve. Chicago loves you. The Warriors and Spurs, game two tonight. No Kawhi Leonard for the Spurs because of manslaughter or something like that. I don't know. Also, tonight's the NBA lottery, and the Bulls aren't in it. So get ready for that coveted 18th overall. And finally, here's an uplifting story for you. Researchers have counted 38 million pieces of trash on a South Pacific island. Don't those people recycle? Ah, that's the rub. Nobody lives on the island. It's uninhabitable. So the trash is just washing up from the Pacific Ocean. 38 million pieces. How much you want to bet that half of the trash is just used U2 CDs? Hon, do we really need these 30 U2 CDs? No, get rid of them. I don't know what to do. That's the carry out for May 16, 2017. Hey, it's hot out, so I guess it was a bad idea to make all this beef stew. Sorry. But it's half off. All right, coming up, Commissioner, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor is going to join us. We'll talk about summer jobs. Also on the table, we're going to have a conversation about what Chicago needs coming up at 8 o'clock. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, have you been following the idea that Steve Kerr is not on the bench, that he's just in the locker room? I saw it. I knew it was happening, but I didn't recognize that it was this serious.
It's the back issues, right? Is that neck that he's?
Because he missed a couple games in one of the series, and I'm like, well, it doesn't really matter because they're playing. I don't even know who they're playing. Like,
it's Mike Brown who's the interim coach right now. Didn't he used to be with Cleveland?
Yeah,
correct.
He's a big time coach. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I was a big Kerr fan when he was here. So I mean, I hope he's all right.
Yeah.
It's warm outside.
Yeah. What'd you do today? Did you pack up the snowblower?
Did a lot of sweating.
Yeah.
I sweat a lot. Yeah. It was gross.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good, though. That like gets all the toxins out.
Well, I told you back in January the snowblower was packed away.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have any snow. You know?
I thought maybe you like half packed it. And you thought, you know, just in case there's a late May snowstorm.
I was holding out hope for something late March, you know, that weird kind of early April thing, but it never materialized.
Well, I have a feeling snow will dump on us next year. So you're going to get don't get crazy. Don't sell it. You'll get your investment.
Oh, I'm not selling it. It's brand new, man. Needs to get out there.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. We're waiting on Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, supposed to join us here for the 7:30 call, but haven't gotten a call from her yet. She'll come through. Well, to talk about summer jobs, this is interesting because this will probably come up a little bit in our conversation about Chicago and the community in the On the Table segment we're doing at 8 o'clock tonight. We're going to, you know, I don't know if you've ever participated in On the Table. I've done it before. The idea being that, you know, someone hosts a dinner at a house or a restaurant or a museum or other community center and invites three or four people. You sign up through the community trust, Chicago Community Trust, and the idea is you talk about the issues that are happening in your neighborhood. And it could be hyper-local. It could be about the park down the street or about what you want to do about, you know, the what's going on with the retail spaces in your neighborhood. Or it could be bigger picture, like what do you think about society, where we're at, what's happening in your community and abroad. So we're going to do the same thing tonight here on the Download. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, the big table becomes On the Table. It's almost perfect, right? I mean, that's the whole idea. It kind of works out for us. Daniel Ash will be here. He's the chief marketing officer, Chicago Community Trust. He's been on a couple times with us talking about the On the Table. If you our regular listener to the Download, he's been on two times before. Interesting conversation about why they do this. But tonight it'll be Daniel Ash, Saul Flores, who is the executive director at La Casa Norte. They serve youth and families who are confronting homelessness, stable housing, issues like that. Otis Monroe is the CEO at the Monroe Foundation, economic development projects in low-income communities. So we'll talk about, I'm hoping out of this conversation that we can, you know, have an honest conversation about what are the big priorities? Is it violence? Is it jobs? Is it inequality? What is it? What does Chicago need to do for you to make this a better place? And that's the conversation I want to host with the people who are going to be in studio. Not necessarily, you know, let's have a conversation, just complain about all the things that are wrong with the city, but what can it do to make your experience as a Chicagoan better? And you're welcome to join the conversation, 312-981-7200. We'll do that coming up at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock tonight, Big Sadie, the Americana Roots. Do you say Roots? Do you just say Roots band? What do you say?
Yeah.
You're more in tune with the Roots music.
Sure, Roots.
That's what it said. It said American Roots music.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the new alt country, right? Alt countries, that's like microbreweries and craft breweries. Same idea, right? Alt countries out, Americana's in. So we'll talk a Big Sadie. We'll be performing live in studio in the 9 o'clock hour. Also tonight, Public School, which is the art exhibit at the Hyde Park Art Center. Hyde Park Art Center has been around for, geez Louise, coming up on 80 years. So we'll talk with them about...
This is hashtag amazing.
I don't know what that is. So let's... You know what we'll do here? Let's do this. So we'll talk with Hyde Park Arts Center coming up. Some of the people, the co-curator, the director of exhibitions, and the 12-year-old theater critic, Ada Gray, will be in studio with us as well. So that's coming up at 9 o'clock hour. I'm going to play The Worst at 10 o'clock. Well, when we talk about violence and gangs, one issue that keeps coming up is how do our leaders effectively create positive change? You could take the approach of tightening gun laws, mandatory minimums, putting kids in jail. But that's been tried, and got to be honest, not much has changed. So what about the issues that cause kids to turn to a life of crime? Drugs, poverty, and of course, unemployment. We've seen a correlation between the lack of jobs available for teens and a rising rate of violence. So this summer, Mayor Emanuel and other leaders have made it their duty to resurrect jobs for youth, not just resurrect them, but to expand them, to attract money from the private sector and create more opportunities for Chicago youth to stay off the streets today. Alderman Pat O'Connor joined Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor to hold a joint session to talk about youth jobs and to coordinate the efforts between Chicago and Cook County. Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor joins me on the line now. Commissioner Gaynor, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so let's talk about this. Why was it necessary to have this this meeting today. I mean, talk about sort of coordinating efforts between the county and the city when it comes to youth jobs.
Sure. I think there's two big reasons that we do something like this. The first is there's a lot of money being spent on youth employment, and a lot of it comes down from the federal government, but the county and the city both have a lot at their disposal. And the key thing is, are we spending it wisely? Is it going to the right people? Because there's kind of three groups of young people. There's young people that get a job without, they don't need anyone's help. Then there's some people who just need access to a job, maybe just, you know, just something at the summer to do and keep them busy. Mm-hmm. But then there's a group that's not in school and they're not in work, and they need a lot of help and supervision and oversight. And you want to make sure that you're not ignoring any of those pieces, but that you're really spending time on addressing the parts of the young community that, you know, that need extra assistance. And if we don't get together and hear what the other hand is doing, then it's easy to, you know, to spend money unwisely.
Yeah, right. That has been a little bit of the criticism of the summer mm-hmm. jobs programs of the past, that yes, there's a program, but, you know, it's not the right people. It's not reaching out to the right people. We're essentially seeing, we don't want to repeat the sort of failures of the past with expanding the program for the future.
Well, we don't. And look, if someone is 20 years old and they've never had a structured job, they're going to require some additional services to be successful. And it's going to take more than 6 weeks working a retail job in the summer. But that's an investment worth making because, you know, it's the estimates are that there's over 80,000 young people between 16 and 24 in Cook County that are neither in school or in work. And most of those young people have a high school diploma, so it's not like they're dropping out of high school, but they're still not connected with anything that's positive. And I don't think most people, I think most people would be surprised if they knew how high that number was and when they learn it. And so it behooves all of us to get involved. And, you know, so that's the first thing is to make sure we're all coordinated and spending the money wisely. The second thing is to ensure that everyone understands how many young people we're talking about and figures out how they can be a part of the solution. And so whether that's develop an apprentice program, whether that's, you know, open up yourself, even if you're a small business, to actually employing a young person, everyone needs to be a part of the solution because it's not something that government can solve on its own.
You know, what about the, I mean, you mentioned the youth, you know, especially when you talk about mm-hmm. the issues that are needed for some youth in Chicago that might be more at risk, that might not necessarily be ready for a 6 week, you know, job at a retail organization. How do you reach those people? Because I would think those kids may not want the job. Maybe they're active being on the street, or they're comfortable where they're at in the drug trade or whatever it might be. How do you attract a high-risk youth to a jobs program if they don't want to get the job?
Well, I think that we kind of overestimate how much people want to be out living that life. So when Arnie Duncan came back to town about a year ago, he and I partnered up and we started a project. So I founded the Cook County Land Bank about 4 years ago. And so we buy vacant homes and we sell it to developers and you go for rehab. And, you know, that was how we were progressing. And when Arnie came back in town and trying to hire this hardest to employ group of young people, you know, the light bulb went out to some degree of saying, you know, maybe they're not going to work at Starbucks, but maybe they could do deconstruction or demolition or rehab of housing. It's in the neighborhood. It's a physical job. And it's obviously something that's needed. And so we paired together. We have a project out in Pullman where the land bank, the Cook County Land Bank, bought 20 homes. Arnie recruited 30 young people. And these are all guys, none of whom who had a structured job. But you know what? When he had, you know, he had gone around to a variety of places over the kind of 6 or so months. And the common question was, how much would you have to make an hour in order to leave this life and come into a job that was, you know, regular 9 to 5 Monday through Friday? And the average answer is about $12 an hour.
Wow.
And so because you're not looking over your shoulder and you have a steady income and you're doing something that you want to do and you're getting trained to go further on. And so I think, you know, sometimes we have to challenge ourselves to say, you know, let's not assume what's happening. Let's actually go out and ask people. And, you know, that's what we did. And now we have this pilot that's working successfully and we're looking to expand it because to some degree, there's a lot of ways to employ people. And I think this whole idea of investing in our neighborhoods, both the people and the buildings, is the way to go.
And when we talk about investment, and Mayor Emanuel talked about this not too long ago with his big speech about trying to get the private sector involved. How do you get the private sector involved for summer jobs programs, meaning different corporations and business owners that will step up and offer up internships and other opportunities for kids, essentially for the summer? How do you do that at the government level to make sure that people want to be a part of this?
So I think what you do is you find people who are, who are trying something new. You make sure it works, and then you expand it. So, Aon, it's been in the news. I am also affiliated with Aon, and we launched an apprentice program in January. We have 26 young people, and they have a 2-year job where they go. They work Monday through Thursday. They go to school on Fridays, and at Harold Washington College, it's a collaboration with city colleges. And it was this idea that said, look, most large companies only hire people with a 4-year degree. Mm-hmm. But really look at a lot of the entry-level jobs. They don't necessarily require a 4-year degree. It's just we've gotten in the habit of hiring from a 4-year college. And so we challenged ourselves, and we went and looked, and we said, okay, these are the jobs that don't really require a 4-year degree. And by the way, the attrition is really high, so maybe we're onto something if we don't have someone who's graduated from college. We brought in these 26 young people. They're from neighborhoods all over Chicago, the majority of which are Black or Latino. And so we're diversifying our workforce, but we're also bringing in a talent pool that normally we wouldn't hire because they didn't already have a 4-year degree.
Right.
So there's examples out there that are workable. And so there's apprentice programs, there's co-ops. And a lot of it is just getting people to look differently about who they're willing to hire and what kind of skills someone has to have and how much are they willing to invest in training.
We're talking with Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor about the summer jobs programs, both with the Cook County at the Cook County level and the city of Chicago. When you talk about incentivizing the private sector to get involved in this, and not just this issue, but other issues, it always comes up the idea a lot of companies are going to get tax breaks for this or tax breaks for that. Is there a way to tie together the idea of, if you're going to get tax breaks through the city or through the county, that you have to give back in this kind of way, that you have to give the youth of Chicago and the Chicago area jobs and opportunities?
That is a really good question. And so much of the reason that people get tax incentives in the county is around general issues of economic growth and not tied to direct employment. And I think you're exactly right that if you're going to give a tax incentive, it should be tied to employment. And whether that's employment of adults or employment of teenagers and young people, whether or not someone's working is measurable. Okay, whether or not you're employing someone is something that the government can measure. So often when the tax incentives go out, it's really hard to measure what does really economic growth mean? And are we being effective and efficient when we're issuing these incentives?
Right. For you at the county level and you've seen all this movement, in the lead, I kind of talked about the idea that we've seen more punitive action on kids involved in gangs or crime. And rarely are we actually looking at the root problems. Do you feel like this is a move, a sea change when it comes to government, both at the county and the city level, to invest and expand on a summer jobs program to essentially have the government looking at the causes as opposed to the effect?
Look, to be honest, sometimes it's everything old is new again. I mean, did you grow up in Chicago?
Yeah, out in the suburbs. Yeah, Wonder Lake.
Okay. So, when I was young and growing up here, you could get a job at 14 or 15 with the Park District or mm-hmm. with Streets and Sand helping with block clubs. And there was a lot more. Kids were caddying. There was a lot more things for younger kids to do and for teenagers from an employment perspective because the jobs were different and we don't have those same types of jobs as much anymore. And so, it used to be that the market took care of some of that, but also there used to be an enormous amount more of federal funding. Up until kind of the end of the Bill Clinton presidency, there was another several $100 million of summer youth employment money that came into Chicago and Cook County. And that faded over time to now that it's a shadow of what it was. And all of that money paid for kids to, to work in parks, to work at festivals, to do things to keep them busy and productive. And we'll never know that whether or not that investment meant that they developed good work habits for the future. Mm-hmm. But the situation that we're in right now is not optimal. And so the market has changed, the skill level of jobs has increased, and so we need to intervene to say, you can't wait until you're 21 to get a job because you've had to go to 4 years of college. We've got to find ways for people to work when they're younger and for them to work in a cooperative way and for businesses to share some of that cost of learning. Because if we don't, you're just going to have a whole generation that has to wait way too long to develop good work habits.
Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor talking about summer youth jobs, both at the county and the city level. Commissioner Gaynor, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
It was great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Big Sadie will be here. Americana Roots Music live in studio. As well as we'll talk with the Hyde Park Art Center. We'll be in studio talking about Public School, their new arts exhibit, which is on display now. Also in that conversation, we will introduce you to 12-year-old Ada Gray, who is a theater critic. 12 years old. I mean, I don't know about you, Daniel, but... At 12 years old, I was not reviewing Steppenwolf shows.
I was with you. Didn't happen.
Today was the fourth annual On the Table Forum. It's a day-long series of conversations hosted by Chicago area residents. Participants meet in homes, restaurants, museums. They talk about the issues facing their communities. They bounce around ideas. They strengthen relationships. On the Table is created by Chicago Community Trust, which is hoping to elevate civic conversation. We thought, since we have the big table 8 o'clock every night here on the Download, why not open it up tonight to have our own On the Table? Joining me in studio to talk Chicago community and what we can do to make Chicago work for everyone, Daniel Ash. He's a chief marketing officer for the Chicago Community Trust. Good to see you, Daniel. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Sol Flores is the executive director of La Casa Norte. Sol, thanks for being here. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
And Otis Monroe is the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. He's also in studio. Otis, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So first, Daniel, let's get the business out of the door. This is a big day for you. You've probably been up since the crack of dawn, going different places. Tell about, we had you on the show last year and the year before talking about On the Table, Chicago Community Trust. How has it been today?
It's been a wonderful day. I, the best way to explain it, it feels like election day, but it feels like the candidate was the city of Chicago. Like the residents were electing themselves to sort of civic participation. And from early this morning to just moments ago, like thousands of conversations about community. And they were conversations that were dictated, directed, controlled by everyday people. And that's extremely powerful, yeah. And quite frankly, what our city needs.
Okay, so tell us about, I mean, how successful was it? How many people were involved, things like that?
So here's what we know. We, across the region, and when I say region, we're talking about multiple the counties, we had 5,800 sort of table conversations.
Wow.
And for listeners, I want them to understand that these are groups of 10, 12 folks sitting around a table, sharing a meal, and having a conversation about an issue that they care about. So again, 5,800 is what we're estimating right now. We feel that we've reached through social media, through all of our engagement efforts, 100,000 Chicagoans.
Wow.
What I've experienced today is sort of twofold. One, people have a deep hunger for participation instead of civic life. The narrative is often that, well, folks don't care. They want to just...
Right.
Watch TV, listen to the pundits, and they're sort of disconnected. Right now, we're at a stage where folks wanted to kind of reclaim the city.
They want to engage, right?
Yeah, there was one young man, and when I say young man, I'm like a 20-year-old organizer, and he made the point about it's like the state and community. And then he came and said, well, the community is the state, right? We have the power to control sort of the destiny of our neighborhoods. And so this idea that our voice matters, and mm-hmm. if we listen generously to one another, we'll develop relationships. If we develop relationships, then we can do things together.
So why did you get involved in this? Because you're on the steering committee as well, and of course with La Casa Norte. What is it about On the Table and the Chicago Community Trust Initiative here that got you involved?
Yeah, I think, you know, Daniel's point about it's an opportunity to engage folks who normally don't see themselves participating in the conversation. A couple years ago, the conversation centered around the word philanthropy and what does that mean to you? And that's such a big 27, you know, letter word. And we broke it down to say everyone can be a philanthropist. So for me, I've obviously devoted my professional and personal life to community development, and I work in community, and I'm constantly talking to community. But this is a way to engage all those other stakeholders and people around who aren't doing it on a 9-to-5 basis, but who want a way to enter with grace, with non-judgment, with maybe, I don't know what's going on. I'm not that versed in education or housing or police safety. I just know I feel bad when I listen to the news, or I want my kids to feel safe walking down the street, or I have empathy for what's happening in this part. So I got involved and have been a part of the steering committee so that we can make sure lots of different diverse voices are also involved.
Yeah, that's a great question. How do you get people involved? Let's turn to Otis, you know, Otis Monroe. You're on the steering committee as well. What is it about On the Table that brought you here? And also, you know, how do you get diverse voices involved in something like this?
Well, for the Monroe Foundation, we became involved because we felt it was an opportunity to challenge those, particularly in the African-American community, that has stated that philanthropy has been on the wrong side of impacting the base African-American community. And what I mean by the base African-American community are the everyday sheroes and heroes in our community that are working anywhere from workforce development to reentry for ex-offenders to promoting affordable housing. So we saw it as an opportunity to challenge those that wanted to challenge philanthropy through the convening of dialogues through this on-the-table process, which is what we did today, and began to mutually put something out there that this is what we want to talk about, and this is how philanthropy can help us bring attention to the work that we're doing that's not being given to our issue.
All three of you have been involved in On the Tables today, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just sort of with your organizations, or in Daniel, in your case, jumping around. What are people talking about? What have you gleaned? What have you learned from sort of dipping into the conversations that you've sort of been around?
Yeah. So we curated a couple different conversations last night and tonight, specifically with young people aged 18 to 25 who are experiencing homelessness or a housing crisis. And this year's thing we did focus on, and the trust gave us some really great guidelines and media to use, we focused on this theme of social inclusion. Mm-hmm. And so we asked young people, what does it mean, right? And they brainstormed, they came up with ideas, and they voiced, these are the challenges that I feel as a young person having a housing crisis in Chicago today. This is what I experience. This is what I see. And then we encourage, well, what's next, right? What do you think are the solutions? What are things that other people can be doing? Obviously, they know us as a partner in the organization, and the staff members that are there care about them. But we said, what can you do? How do you see yourself as an active participant? And we heard young people say things like, we can actually vote. Yes, a lot of us were not interested in sort of the same thing, but now as a result of what just happened, we're actually interested in learning about this. They said, we can include others. We can find ways to break down segregation. I mean, they're talking about segregation in this city. We had one young person say, I've walked down the street with identifying as African American, and he was with a white youth, and he said, we're treated differently when we walk into the same store, and yet I know in my heart we come from the same place and we're going to sleep at the same shelter tonight, right? Yeah. So they're voicing and trying to articulate solutions that they can project forward both for themselves and for others to get engaged with.
Sol Flores is the executive director of La Casa Norte, Otis Monroe, the CEO of the Monroe Foundation, Daniel Ash, the chief marketing officer at Chicago Community Trust. On the Table 2017 is the hashtag. We're doing our own On the Table tonight. We'll take a break and we'll start up. I really want to ask you guys, you know, what can we do? Just in this room, what can we do to make Chicago a better place for all of us? Not just, you know, just for us, the four of us that are in this conversation, but what can be done as you guys as the heads of some very important foundations and organizations in this town? What can we do to make Chicago a better place for all? That's the conversation we're going to have here on the Table 2017. We'll take a quick break. And we'll be back, 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's the big table turned into on the table tonight. Chicago Community Trust, as Daniel Ash told us, 5,800 different events and dinners and lunches and meetings today. Over 100,000 people reached. This is a big, big project for Chicago. It happens every year. This year, no different. On the Table 2017 is the hashtag on social media. In studio with me tonight, Daniel Ash. He's the Chief Marketing Officer for the Chicago Community Trust, who puts on the Table. Sol Flores is the Executive Director of La Casa Norte. And Otis Monroe is the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. All right, so let's get into this. Let's get into our On the Table. I apologize, there's no food. That's my first mistake. I have some trail mix on my desk if you go there. But all right, so let's get into it. Let me start. I kind of set up the question, which is, how can we make Chicago a better place for everyone, for all? Otis, why don't we start with you? What do you think the biggest issue is that is affecting Chicago right now?
Well, we are working with a group of youth called Packing Power, people organizing and winning everything right. And there are youth who are gang involved or on the fringes of becoming gang involved, 16 to 24 years of age. From across the city, Inglewood, Roseland, the Austin community, supported by the Chicago Community Trust. And we just spent 8 weeks training them on how to become engaged and civically in changing their conditions. And one of the outcomes is that the best anti-violence program is a job. Now, you know, you have groups that's having studies after study, the study of the study of why black kids and Latino kids are gang involved and this and that, all that other kind of nonsense. And our youth, their position is, we're tired of being studied. We just need a job. Otherwise, if I can't find work, then I have no choice but to be on what we call the grind.
We just had Bridget Gaynor on, the Cook County Commissioner, talking about summer jobs for teens. One of the questions I ask her, I'll ask you too. I mean, what about this concept of, you can have jobs available and the private sector can create summer jobs for teens, but how do you get them to actually want them?
I know Commissioner Gaynor, and she's an admirable elected official, but at the end of the day, sometimes these government-led initiatives still have, they have limitations, they have a set criteria, who can be involved. And then our initiative, what makes our initiative that the Chicago Community Trust supports, and they're having an on-the-table dialogue this evening, is that it has no restrictions. So if you're a young person that has a felony class conviction and you want to create employment opportunities for yourself, that's really what we're leading this toward, is that their initiative is going to create a pop-up retail operation that allows them to sell apparel that they have created logos for that we're going to launch this June in Inglewood.
Okay.
So that now they can take their natural gifts and abilities, brand them on caps and hoodies and T-shirts and sweatpants, and sell them in an outdoor pop-up retail operation on 63rd and Halston, right across from the recently opened Inglewood Square, move over to Chatham, move over to Wicker Park, so they have variety of geography and variety of opportunity. But the point being, it's self-led. So the conversation that we need to have, that the Chicago Community Trust gets, is that, and that the conversation that we, the Monroe Foundation, want to have with others in philanthropy, is let's talk about how to invest and seed these non-traditional approaches to creating economic opportunity for young people, not just fund the study, but fund the response and the innovative response. And I think this youth-led entrepreneurial initiative, started off as Packing Power, to now it's called Youth Boom.
So not only jobs, but the idea of taking pride and entrepreneurship and the idea of really sort of digging in.
Listen, I believe that, and the young people have said this, and I know just from my own experiences as a young youth in Inglewood and Roseland community growing up, we can have peace circles and conversations all day long, but I feel real good about myself when I got legitimate money in my pocket. I feel real good when I got some real money in my pocket. I can't eat a study.
I can't eat a study. Yeah. All right.
Justin, what I think you're getting to, and Otis, that's fantastic, I think, to build on it, is how are we as a city preparing young people from their whole selves?
Right, right.
So clearly economic independence and economic opportunity is first and foremost, right, when they're ready to work. Right. I would take that a step back and say education, right? I mean, we still have a long ways to go in the city to make sure that every child participating in Chicago public schools has access, has equity, really preparing them. And then let's take a step back from there and think about early childhood education, right? And how are we making sure when comes out of the womb, right, a Chicagoan being born here is prepared best to learn and to participate. So I think as a city, what we can do better is making sure we're looking at all elements of a young person's experience being here, right, and making sure we're addressing. Now, I work for an organization, La Casa Norte, and we're very focused on serving the most vulnerable, right? So that those sort of class of young people who've been thrown away, kicked away, sort of shunned, those that we'd like to ignore, those that get weeded out of other programs, they fail out of other things because they don't meet a threshold, because they can't show up on time, they can't meet those certain eligibility. Our approach is there's no wrong door, right? You can come in, where you get in where you fit in, and my job, right, like the reason why I am there and want to be there, now why everyone's community house, is to serve those and to work in partnership with them so that they have the life of their dreams.
Is it harder to do that job in 2017 than, say, a decade ago or 20 years ago? I mean, we hear in the news all the time about social service agencies being depleted, the fact that there's no state budget, the funding has changed. We've seen even, you know, economists and people who study government saying the future of government's going to be private sector. We're not going to have governments funding social service agencies, people who want to help youth homelessness. You're going to have to figure it out on your own. Is it harder to do that job now than, say, 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the sector for 14 years. I definitely think that it's become more difficult, certainly with the recent state budget debacle. I mean, here's the thing, Justin. Private sector can't just ignore an entire swath and population of people, right? There's an opportunity to invest and create an intervention now, like for the young people that Otis was talking about, so that 10 years from now, they're actually participating in a positive way in our local economy. All of the young people that we're talking about have talents, have opportunity, have the desire. When you said, you know, how do we get them to want a job? All those summer jobs are taken. There's like five youth for every single one of those jobs. I don't meet a young person or someone who ever walks into any of our shelters or housing programs that says, this is the best that I can do. This is the most that I want for my life. So I think it behooves private sector, and I think private sector gets it, like examples in working with philanthropic partners like the Trust or all the, you know, hundreds of thousands of volunteers that we have here in Chicago want to find a way to get involved and do something.
Sol Flores, Otis Monroe, Daniel Ash, let's take a quick break so we get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll continue this conversation because it is really interesting that we had the conversation about youth jobs with Commissioner Gaynor in the 7:30, which was unrelated, but I see it's interconnected. And jobs and education, what we heard, we'll hear from Daniel as well as what he thinks about the pressing issues of today in Chicago. And we'll continue the conversation, hashtag on the table 2017, here on The Download. Stay with us. All right. Thanks, Rob. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are having a great conversation. On the Table 2017, the fourth annual On the Table forum has been all day, 5,800 different events, 100,000 people reached. It's put on by the Chicago Community Trust. Daniel Ash is here, Chief Marketing Officer for the Trust. Also, Sol Flores, she's an Executive Director for La Casa Norte, and Otis Monroe, CEO of the Monroe Foundation. We're having a conversation about Chicago. What's standing in the way of this being the best city for everybody? That's really the conversation. We've heard from Otis and Sol. Let's continue with Daniel. Daniel, what in your estimation, what is the biggest issue? What should we be prioritizing as a city that we need to fix?
Well, here's what I heard today, and I've heard this consistently over the past few years. You have residents of Chicago sort of saying something that we heard nationally during the elections. Like, the residents are saying that we're not seen when we're not heard. And there's this, I think, strong belief, and I think it's a valid belief, that our city will be stronger if I have an opportunity to participate more. So I heard that across the board. It didn't matter sort of race, it didn't matter age. Is this notion of see me, I'm right. here, I exist, and I want to participate. And I want to participate in meaningful ways. Two, I actually think to make our city the best city they can be, you hear residents saying and that we need to be sort of radically creative in our approach.
Make no small plans.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, our city was built with that type of boldness, right? And I think residents want to go back to that. And I'm going to give you an example. And I know this may actually sound shocking to some listeners. But this afternoon, I'm with a group of sort of worker organizers. These are folks who work with the unions, and we're talking all unions, from folks who work in the hotels to tradesmen, et cetera. And a conversation sort of landed on this idea of police relationships with community. And you have a young man who says, you know, I was visiting Scotland, and I was blown away by the fact that officers who patrol community do not carry firearms. They're disarmed. And for him, it was a young man. This is a young man. He was like shocked that you could have a police force that was serving a community but disarmed. And so the question posed to the group was, well, if we really want to change the dynamic at the neighborhood level with police and community, you know, would we consider something like that? Now, again, in this country, you may think, well, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Right. But you don't even know where you'd start on that.
Yeah,
right?
Well, how would you start? But these are residents who are saying, well, maybe that is possible. Because if we really want police to serve and we want there to be this sense of trust, we have to sort of level the playing field. We have to sort of create space where people don't feel threatened.
Right.
And how do you do that? So that's the type of, it sounds ludicrous on one hand, but
like
is
you
coming
said,
from,
I mean, make no small plans.
Exactly.
Right?
It's like, can we reimagine the set of possibilities?
I guess, you know, that's, it feels like everybody weighing in, whether it's jobs, education, or just the idea of being creative. I mean, there is this idea of reimagining. You know, of what the system is right now. And you hear it on both sides of the aisle. When you talk about political persuasions, you'll hear it from the right and the left. Liberals, conservatives all say the system is broken. They may have different reasons on why it is, but that always, there's this concept of what we're doing right now. I think of education as a great example. You'll hear from both sides saying what we're doing right now with public education is broken. We need to figure out a new way to do education. Now, there's vastly different opinions on what to do with that. But there is at least a consensus that there needs to be a reimagining of some of the things that we count on as a society. Do you agree with that, Otis?
I agree with that. But, you know, I've been an advocate and organizer for 40 years. I started off as a kid in Woodlawn. And I hear everybody's got a perspective. But at the end of the day, my educational pursuits were rooted in what my grandparents required us all to do. So at the end of the day, it does. There's an element of this that's old school. For us, 40 years ago, you had the black community, not going to speak to what I know, the black community, it meant something to get an education, make a life for yourself, take care of your parents, take care of your grandparents. Now what you have today, this whole concept of the village, it takes a village to raise a child. That ain't going to happen. The villagers are too young. You got grandparents in their 30s now. They themselves did not have any educational pursuits or dropped out. So we could talk about funding formulas, can't rely on the tax base. That's above my pay grade, and I'm a pretty smart man. But at the end of the day, there has to be some, we have to find a way to bring back some personal resolve that in spite of everything around me, in spite of all the abandonment, drug selling, this and that, I'm going to stay in school. I'm going to pursue something. I'm not going to hang with this crowd here.
A little personal responsibility.
And I don't know how that happens, but it goes back to basics.
Yeah, it does go back to basics. But residents are saying, like, I have the willpower, and I want to help create willpower in others. But they're also saying, the system should be on my side. The system should not be sort of aimed at me or aimed against me or positioned against me. So there's it's two sides of this.
Yeah.
Every individual in this country has some responsibility, and that responsibility has to be nurtured, has to be encouraged. And when you fail to sort of meet that promise of that nurturing,
right,
which is rooted in love, right, then as a society, we have to make up for it. And I think that's where we have to overinvest. But again, the folks that I heard today, and I every year we do this, I'm hearing this. I want to do my part, but every other stakeholder, institutional, individual, needs to do their part as well. And when we talk about our most challenged communities, and this is where this work to me really makes sense, our most challenged communities, it requires an additional investment of person power, of financial power, to, again, make up for neglect. This idea of, see me, I've been here, is rooted in this idea that I've been unseen and neglected.
Yeah.
And you just don't magically snap your fingers and have folks ready to enter the job market.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily also an 11-month intervention program that's going to solve a young person's experience who's been part of a system and been mistrusted and misabused by a system for many, many years as well. Mm-hmm. You know, Justin, one thing I just wanted to go back to that came up a little bit, which is like, how can others get involved in what you're hearing about residents? You know, we work with about 1,500 volunteers a year. You know, we were talking at the break about, you know, sort of local businesses here in Chicago and how are they getting involved. Well, here's the thing. Those businesses are made up of people, right? And so we get emails all the time, requests from, you know, everyday kind of, not the CEO necessarily, but folks just saying, what can I do? I Googled, I want to do something with my kid on the weekends, or my small staff team want to get involved. And like, we're not smart enough, or we can't fix policy, and we can't go build 10 homes for you tomorrow, but what can we do? What can five smart people who have some expendable resources do on a Saturday afternoon, right?
Yeah, what can you do to be heard, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I had a great conversation with Chicago Cares. They were on a couple of weeks ago, and we took the premise of, what if you took volunteerism and treated it like the military draft, that you had to volunteer? I know that's hilarious, the idea that it's mandatory volunteering. It's an oxymoron. But the idea that, what if volunteerism in this country was mandatory and you had to have service, not unlike you did to the military or social service? What kind of world would that be? What would we use that power for? What would we see in our cities, in our areas, in our rural areas, that would be different than what we see today?
I love the idea of service, and I think community service should be natural. Like, if you really are going to be a civic actor in your community at any level, it begins with service. Here's what I hear sort of through our networks at the Trust, particularly among younger residents. They want to serve, and they want to sort of be charitable, but they also want to solve problems at the sort of root cause level. Mm-hmm. So I think the more service that you sort of advocate for, or mandate, you're going to even see a deeper interest in, like, why are we having to be so charitable? Why do we have to?
Yes.
What's causing these problems,
right? Yeah.
And again, particularly with the younger donors, right, that we engage, they're saying, yeah, I want to go and get the coats at wintertime, and I want to do those things. But why can't we afford the books at the school system, right? Why do I have to donate? And so this is where system change sort of comes in. Again, so I agree with this point. Folks want to participate. They want to get engaged. On the folks who are sort of at the resident level in communities that are dealing with sort of hardship, they're saying, meet needs that I express. They say, see me, engage me. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I want to make sure that's really clear, is that I've heard this today. We don't need thousands of folks parachuting our community and being paternalistic.
Right.
We want relationships, right? We want to share power. We don't want it to be sort of worked on. We don't want it to be studied.
Yeah.
So we do have to, there's a balance there. But I think, the more involvement you see in public life, I think the deeper relationships are going to form. And I actually think you're going to see coalition building that is aimed at again, these tough, seemingly intractable problems, right? So again, service in partnership with others, strangers not becoming strangers, but becoming in relation with one another, leads to the type of coalitions that will allow the city to advance.
Let me ask you this as we kind of wrap up here. You know, I think about what's happening in Washington when you talk about partisan politics, and not only that, but when you go into the country, that there's a deep divide between the political beliefs of one side versus the other. Mm-hmm. When you think of the city of Chicago and even the Chicago area, it's similar. It may not be divided down political lines, but it might be social lines, which is the most segregated city in America, that people don't necessarily listen or want to understand anything about the other communities that might just be across the river or, you know, just a stone's throw from where they live. I mean, there's a tribal style here in Chicago where people keep to themselves. What can you do to change that? What do we have to do to change that, to essentially listen to each other in this town, to make this a better city and a better Chicago region for all? Otis?
Well, I think everything begins with dialogue. One of the initiatives that, with Packing Power with the youth, we just didn't reach out among just African-American youth that are involved in the grind, if you will, and I keep using that colloquialism, but I want to keep it 100. But we reached out to Arab-American youth and young adults and Muslim youth and young adults, because the perspective of the kids is that something kind of soul just said about being homeless. At the end of the day, you profile me this, but at the end of the day, we're all going to the same shelter. So why are we fighting each other? Well, the same thing with the perspective of the youth. You're Muslim, Arab, I'm African American, you're an immigrant. But at the end of the day, each of us are being profiled or pitted against one another when we should be combining ourselves to form a collective strength of advocacy, which makes it harder for society at large to pit one ethnic group against the other. And that's what we call it, packing power.
So, I mean, that there is, I hear in that as well, the same concept that Daniel brought up about being heard. Mm-hmm. This concept of, you know, are we hearing each other?
Yeah, and I think obviously clearly on the table, like what it's been doing for the last 4 years, is critical to doing that. You know, I think one of the things that's important is our approach, though. And so how are we listening? And are we doing that with grace and forgiveness, right? I have folks all the time who want to talk about issues of poverty and homelessness, and they feel embarrassed or ashamed to ask certain questions. Or they feel like, oh, I'm not prepared with that type of background. And so how I can be graceful in their asking questions or in listening for them, so they can ask whatever they need to ask to get the information that they need, and that closes the gap between us and them. So I think it's dialogue, but it's a way that you engage. And the second that you can do that, something opens up.
Daniel?
I love the phrase Sol used, sort of listening with grace. As you know this, Justin, that this all started with an exploration of philanthropy, right? And I actually think to be graceful, you have to come with a loving spirit. And I know that sounds touchy-feely. I know it sounds very sort of high-minded. But I feel that residents are saying that we want to have opportunities to build relationships, to develop that type of empathy. And we want to bring that type of loving spirit of ourselves, our household, of our city, of our community. We want to bring all of that to the table, right? And if you bring it all to the table, you're going to be in a space where you can hear. And if you can hear and you can see someone, you can then build that relationship that leads to meaningful actions, right? So some of those actions will be, like, we need you on this Saturday to help clean up this park. Some of it's going to be, we're going to need you to join us in this march downtown. We're going to need you to sign a petition.
We're going to need you to hear.
We're going
to
need
listen.
You. Yeah, but all
of
that.
Have consciousness.
Have consciousness, right? But all of those actions start with that, to me, begin with relationship. Mm-hmm. And relationship, in order for it to form, like, you have to bring that loving spirit. And that's what philanthropy ultimately is all about, right? Love of other human beings. And again, we're trying as an institution to get back to that. Yeah. So we're not studying, but we're engaging.
Should we end with a group hug? Should that what we do? Is that how On the Table ends?
Well, I mean, we ended with a hug.
All right. Well, we'll do that.
And I just want to give a shout out on air. I said this during the break that I want to personally thank the Chicago Community Trust, which has really taken an extraordinary leadership role. Terry Mazzani and the board of directors, and Mr. Mazzani is retiring, but has taken the Chicago Community Trust listened. And continues to listen. So it's on the table that becomes continued dialogue off the table. And I just want to publicly on the air recognize the leadership role that the Chicago Community Trust has taken in this initiative.
Otis Monroe is the CEO of the Monroe Foundation. Sol Flores was going to say the exact same thing, I'm sure. The executive director of La Casa Norte. And Daniel Ash, the chief marketing officer for the Chicago Community Trust. On the Table 2017 is the hashtag. They're happening all over Chicago. Tonight, as we speak, people are getting together having similar conversations. Thank you all for coming to the WGN On the Table
Thank
tonight.
You.
We appreciate you being here. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, we're going to talk about a new exhibit at the Hyde Park Arts Center and also introduce you to 12-year-old theater critic Ada Gray. Always good to have 12-year-olds on the show. pleasure to have in studio right now, though, the Chicago band Big Sadie, the acoustic band featuring Elise Bergman and Colin Moore, along with Andy Malloy and Matt Brown, bring us a slice of American roots music. And there are fiddles. Earlier, I wasn't sure if there'd be fiddles, but there are, so I've been redeemed. It's almost a musical history lesson about the folktales and music of the Midwest and the Appalachian Mountains. They've opened for acts ranging from country music legend Marty Stewart to the outfit Wild Bell. They have an album coming out later this week called Keep Me Waiting. They're playing an album release show at the Hideout on Friday night. Here they are, Big Sadie with the song Danny. Take it away.
Something pretty ugly when you knocked upon the door. Told you, honey, don't you come round here no more. How can he be angry when you told him from the start your intentions and the habits of hotel, but he wouldn't let you in.
Yeah, all right. Give it up, Michigan Avenue, huh? Come on. There you go. I'll have to get this on. There we go. There we go. Sorry about that. Rose still got the effects on the... There's that Big Sadie in studio here on 720 WGN. That's the track Danny off the new album that's coming out Friday, Keep Me Waiting. The album release show is at the Hideout on Friday night. That was Elise Bergman, Colin Moore, Andy Malloy, and Matt Brown. Of course, Big Sadie, Chicago band. We're going to talk with them right after the break here, and we'll hear some more live music on 720 WGN. Stay with us. In studio tonight, the Chicago band Big Sadie, featuring Elise Bergman, Colin Moore, Andy Malloy, Matt Brown, American Roots Music. We just heard the track Danny live in studio. That song is the single, I guess. It's a single off of the new album Keep Me Waiting, which will be released on Friday, right?
Correct.
There you go. And the album release show will be at the Hideout Friday night, 1354 Westwood Bonzio. That show starts at 9 o'clock. Elise and Colin, all original music you guys put together. I kind of said at the beginning, that, you know, it's almost like a musical history lesson, not only just the Midwest where we're at right here, but Appalachian music. Talk about how much of this music comes from history or understanding the history of music.
Well, I grew up in Chicago, so I'm a Chicago gal through and through. I've been, you know, little jaunts other places, but mostly Chicago. I grew up in a really musical family. We listened to a full range of things, but a lot of 60s and 70s folk music, a lot of Chicago blues. So
yeah.
Those were kind of my first loves when it came to music, beyond the, you know, classical stuff I was
Do you draw from those loves?
I definitely do. And when we do a live set, oftentimes we'll play a full range of traditional American music that includes bluegrass and old time and a lot of blues songs that we play sort of in our acoustic style. And Colin is a big influence on me as well. He grew up in East Tennessee, so he's right in the thick of the bluegrass music. And some of my influences in high school were country, but in sort of an alt country Chicago way. The way that Chicago has some serious alt country roots, I was really drawn to bands like that. But Colin really introduced me to bluegrass almost 15 years ago, and so we've kind of merged those sounds and over time developed.
It's interesting when you talk about Americana or American music, there's different genres or subsets of genres inside of that. Talk about, you know, what was being played American music in East Tennessee. What were your influences coming up?
Oh, sure. Well, there was a lot of people. I was around a lot of people playing music, making their own music, mostly old time music. So fiddle and banjo, just fiddle and banjo. And sometimes they would say, play the guitar with us. And so, yeah, you know, and I listened to my family was really into music. My mom's a musician, old time fiddler, and so I was around music, definitely acoustic music, but kind of a variety of music. And I think Elise and I find some common ground. We kind of just write some songs and then, you know, play it, and it's like, whoa, that sounds a little bit country. That sounds a little bit blues. And you know, we have this. We had a banjo player like Andy, and it's like, oh man, this feels like bluegrass. And we can rip an old time tune, you know, fiddle tune. I'll write it on the guitar, and then
yeah,
Matt, can you play this tune? And Matt will play it, and it's like, oh man, we sound like old time band. So
it's a hybrid because of the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's acoustic music, and you know, I've heard people say this before, using different genres, but we just play what we want, and we call it country music.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I mean, there's so many different areas when you talk about roots music. You know, we were kind of talking about it earlier, Pete and I, just about sort of the new name for alt country, or you know, and but when I hear you guys, I mean, there is definitely a traditional sense to it. It isn't sort of a new, you know, fangled art form. This is something that's gone back generations,
right? And I think
great, thank you.
we've played in some combination of this band Big Sadie for quite some time, and we spent a lot of time gigging playing these from kind of the American songbook, and just in the last couple of years our original repertoire has developed enough to record an album and put it out. So this is our first album, even though we've been a band for a while.
Wow.
And the tradition is what I think brings us together. And there's so much community involved in traditional music. And especially in Chicago, there's a great scene of bluegrass and old time and people just coming together to play music. So we want to hold on to that even while we're getting into the territory of writing our own songs. Just have that communal feeling, have that traditional, that rootedness.
Yeah,
and we hope that comes through.
Well, that'll come through for sure at the epicenter of the roots music scene at the Hideout, 1354 West Waubonsia, on Friday night here in Chicago. It's doors open 9 o'clock. Said nine p.m.
Yep.
The album is called Keep Me Waiting. What are we going to hear? We'll hear one more song.
We're going to play the title track, Keep Me Waiting.
Keep Me Waiting. Here they are, Big Sadie. That's Elise Bergman, Colin Moore, along with Andy Malloy and Matt Brown. They, again, are playing at the Hideout Friday night, an album release party for the new album, Keep Me Waiting. Here is the title track. Take it away, Big Sadie.
You came to me and you looked in my eyes. You came to me.
band Big Sadie in studio tonight, 720 WGN, right here in our Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. They got that's a title track off their album that's coming out Friday, Keep Me Waiting. They're playing an album release show at the Hideout on Friday night. Doors at 9 o'clock. The Hideout, 1354 West Wabansia. Big Sadie is Elise Bergman, Colin Moore, Andy Malloy, and Matt Brown. You guys are sensational. Thank you so much for coming and playing on the download tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, the Hyde Park Arts Center is running an exhibition through June 25th. It's called Public School, and it's an installation that explores the modern public school space, the classroom, the bus, the playground, but uses art to flip it on its head. What's the point? Well, to show the connection between art and education and to have artists ask the question, where is learning actually happening in the city and who gets to determine what we should know? In studio with me and is co-curator Rachel Harper. Rachel, thanks for being here.
Hi there.
Also with us tonight, Allison Peters-Quinn. She's a director of exhibitions for the Hyde Park Arts Center. Good to see you. Thanks
Good
for
to
being
see
here.
You too. Thanks, Justin.
And also joining us tonight, Ada Gray. She's a curator, actor, and theater critic. And I forgot to mention, she's 12 years old.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Thanks for being here. All right, why don't I start with you, Rachel? Let's talk about public school, because this concept of putting on an installation to figure out where we're finding learning. I mean, it's a unique concept, but it's something that comes out of other work.
Yeah. Well, I'm working on this project with Jim Degnan, who runs Stockyard Institute. And his project, Stockyard Institute, my project, Seen and Heard, is about advocating for educational spaces outside of schools and how people construct those learning experiences, construct self-educational experiences across our lives. So we really wanted to set up a space where we could invite Chicagoans from neighborhoods to share what they're working on educationally.
Mm-hmm. Because it's such an interesting question about where's learning happening in the city, because as you know, the installation points out, it could be in the playground, it could be in the bus. It's not necessarily from the teacher to what the student is being taught in a lesson plan that day. That seems to be the point, right?
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, if we think back on our own school days, the times when we maybe learned the most were the times in between things, the times when we kind of snuck off to the bathroom to think about things, the times when we were on the bus playing with our friends, when we're running out to recess, and our minds have time to kind of absorb and make meaning of the experiences that we have throughout our lives, outside of school, inside of school, from when we're born, you know, after we graduate.
Let me bring Allison in. How important is it to have this kind of installation, this kind of piece where talking about something that's very important to the city of Chicago in terms of public school, but also flipping it on its head?
Definitely. Well, we thought at this moment it was really important as Chicago public school system is going through some pains and growths. We thought, well, artists are thinking about this all the time, so let's get them in and think about how we learn and where we learn, from the library to the auto mechanic down the street. In different neighborhoods, it's different places and different locations. And this also is something that we did about 10 years ago with Stockyard Institute. Jim Degnan also runs Stockyard Institute. And that was called Pedagogical Factory. And it was a series of questions on a more international scale, bringing artists in and practitioners in. So we thought 10 years later, let's take the pulse again, see what the local community is thinking about in terms of learning, and go from there.
There's so many, I mean, as we think about all of the points of this exhibit, where we talk about learning, as you just mentioned, where we learn. I asked a question about that, but also where we are with arts education and art in the classroom, because that's something that seems to be the first thing to go when we have budget crisis. And then just the idea that this is current events, that people are paying attention to what's happening with our schools and whether or not we have enough money to keep the doors open for the remainder of the season. I mean, how often do you want to find those through lines when creating an exhibition?
Oh, I think it's very important, because contemporary art is very timely, and that's what the Art Center is all about, is kind of opening that access to contemporary art and pointing out that the artists are talking about popular culture, events, current events, things that we all experience, and they're processing in a different way so that we can actually take time to think about it and make a decision and maybe even become activists or organize about something, and that's what we were hoping to do.
I mean, do you find yourself mostly looking at current events when trying to plan out what exhibition series is going to be at the Hyde Park Arts Center?
I mean, that's a little tricky because you never know what's going to happen.
You don't get stale, right?
But luckily, I don't have to make that decision because artists are already making that decision. I really choose. I make studio visits with artists all the time and see what they're thinking about, what they're gravitating towards, and constantly check in, like with Jim and Rachel, to see what their thoughts were about the Chicago public school system and education in general. So it all is kind of full circle. It all informs itself.
Rachel, give us an example of what's in this exhibition. When I talk about, when I say things like, oh, it's art, it flips it on its head, it's a classroom. Give us an example of what we can see down there.
Well, maybe one of my favorite pieces is when you first approach the exhibition, you're greeted by a bus, a school bus, a decommissioned school bus that's like sort of enormously staring you in the face. And what we did with this bus, bringing it into the gallery, changes so much about the feeling of it. Everybody who steps into the bus, who's ever been on a school bus, is sort of transported to that space. But we've also taken all the seats out and moved them into the gallery center in order to create theater seating with the seats. And then the inside has been we have soft rugs. My mother created pillows for inside. She's a quilter. And different lighting to transform the inside of the bus, what you expect to see as this kind of monster beast almost, becomes a soft, welcoming place for people to exchange ideas comfortably.
It kind of becomes a treehouse for our teens that live in there every day.
Right.
The exhibition is called Public School. It's on display right now until June 25th at the Hyde Park Arts Center in Hyde Park. Let's bring in Ada Gray. I'm sorry that I left you out of that first part of the conversation. That was not intentional. Or maybe it was, because I kind of want to focus on your life. 12-year-old curator, actor, theater critic. You were involved in this because you did the keynote speech when the whole thing began. Talk about, what do you think of public school? What do you think of the work that's on display?
I don't personally go to a public school, but I think that for this exhibit, public school is seen in less of a traditional sense. It's seen more as like being schooled by the public, which I think is a really important message, because that's how I've been schooled, being homeschooled, and I've never been to a day of school.
Mm-hmm.
And my first speech was basically about how my experiences in the world have affected me in my everyday life.
How have they? I mean, for you to see this installation and to notice the way that the art plays with school, how does that affect you? How does that grab you as not only as a curator and someone who continues to, I guess, review art and talk about art, but just as a student as well?
Well, the entire exhibit is just very intriguing to me because there are there are so many places for free thinking in this space, and there's the giant school bus like we were just talking about, and there are children that know this place, like they really feel not like their home, but they know what that place is like. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting to see it, as you said, flipped mm-hmm. on its head.
For you, as someone who has one foot inside the kids' world and one foot inside the arts world and the adult world, especially some of the stuff that I've seen you review and stuff that I'm like, that's stuff I don't even want to see. Is this a installation for kids?
I think it is, yes. I think that it's not just for kids, though. I think that it's for all ages. There are so many things for people of all ages to enjoy, and I really enjoyed it, and I saw adults enjoying it, and I saw little kids enjoying it.
And I don't want to get off the topic of public school and the exhibit, and I digress for a second, but how did you get into reviewing all of this theater? Because it's amazing. I mean, not only are you so prolific these are really thoughtful critiques of modern theater that's happening here in Chicago at all the big stages.
Yeah, I've been doing theater reviewing since I was 4.
And, sure, of course. Yeah. We knew that. Everyone
Normal.
Knows. Everyone knows. That's not special.
And my dad is an actor. Okay. And my mom and my dad met in college, and they met through acting. And then when I was about 6, I had been reviewing for a few years now, and I saw Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark before it had opened on Broadway. And there were a bunch of people who were like, I want to find out if this is actually good. I need to find out. And I just went to the show reviewed it, and some people saw my review, and then people started following me.
It's simple, right?
Yeah.
What is it about theater that grabs you?
I love seeing stories told on stage. It's just a really beautiful experience, I think. No matter what the story is, there's just a kind of joy and beauty to that.
How often do you get out to see theater? Because, like I said, you're prolific in the way that there'll be the newest stage show that's out at the Steppenwolf or Goodman or wherever, and you've got a review on it. How often are you going out to see these plays?
It depends on the week. I think the most that I've ever seen was probably like five or six in a week, which was pretty crazy.
Give Chris Jones a run for his money.
Yeah.
And is this something that you think about? I mean, starting at such an early age, at 4 years old, do you think about it being something that's more than just a hobby and a career? Do you see yourself saying, I'm going to go into criticism, I'm going to go into the arts, I'm going to continue to cultivate this skill that I have in reviewing theater?
I would really love to, and I love acting too, so it's kind of the best of both worlds, uh-huh. basically, that I want to be able to do both at the same time, but I might have to choose one at some point, and that'll be a hard decision, but...
You're 12 years old.
Yeah.
I ask these questions, you know, you'll have plenty of time to do that. Ada Gray in studio, she's curator, she's actor, theater critic. And hopefully the new Download Theater Critic, you should come in. I'm gonna tell Chris that his services are no longer needed. You are in. The public school, and it's interesting because to have Ada do the keynote for the whole exhibition, why is that important to have kids, to have teenagers involved in this, to experience public school?
A lot of what I want to say with this exhibition, and I think Jim too, is that education is in places where maybe we don't expect it to be. So educators are people maybe we don't expect them to be. But if we can shift our perspective a little, we see that there are children all around us, like Ada, who are doing educational work to teach us things about theater, to teach us things. Children are powerful cultural workers all around us, but we don't typically invite them to show what it is that they're up to in their own way, in their own work. So it was important that we made a lot of space for people who are 0 to 12 years old to be involved as equally, to not exclude them from this exhibition.
Kids have a huge role at the Hyde Park Art Center. It's not just with the public school exhibition, but there's classes, there's other things. But how important is it to have a young audience involved in the art center and the art that's being produced at the Hyde Park Art Center?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as Rachel was talking, because our audience, well, we have a school and studio program, and I like to say we teach kids from 2 to 92. And we just began a strategic plan to think about our school and reshaping our art education. School and studio program. And part of that, one of the classes that came up were parents and kids taking classes together as so they could teach each other.
Right.
These are some of the ideas that are coming out of public school and Rachel and Jim's thoughts, but also just percolating with art and education in general.
Why is there a need for that? Why is there a need to change what the Hyde Park Arts Center has been doing for years to think of a new strategic plan?
That's a good question. We've been around for over 75 years, and we've kind of been doing the same thing. So we're always game to try new forms, new strategies, new structures, but also because we feel that this is an important time to break barriers, especially economic barriers in the South Side. We've been looking to expand our school, open it up, and that was one of the things that our audience has been telling us was a restriction. So we wanted to make it clear that the Hyde Park Art Center is open for everyone to take classes and to make that happen in various different ways, from scholarships to maybe a pay-what-you-want model or pay-what-you-will model, maybe a volunteer structure. With that, this is all the piloting that will go on throughout the next year.
Because in a certain way, as public schools and other schools get rid of their arts programming because they have to because of budget issues, arts centers, community centers are very important, and they have to be flexible to the community that's around them if they're going to stay vital.
Yeah, and we've been providing art classes for CPS and other private schools for the past 30 years. It's not new territory for us, but it's something that we really want to be a leader in to try to rethink because it's time to rethink.
Allison Peters-Quinn is the Director of Exhibitions at the Hyde Park Art Center in Hyde Park. Also in studio tonight, the co-curator of the exhibition Public School, Rachel Harper. And Ada Gray is the curator, actor, and theater critic who's 12 years old. Where can we find your work, Ada?
At adagray.blogspot.com.
And what's next? What's the big review? What are you going to do next?
I don't know. You don't know? I'm just waiting. Yeah.
We had Chris Jones on recently, and he said that Something Rotten's coming to town.
Ooh.
The Shakespeare musical. And The King and I is going to be downtown. So there's a lot of stuff coming up this summer. So we'll look to your blog to find out what we think of those shows.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for being here. And thanks again for talking about the Hyde Park Arts Center.
Thanks for having us.
Always good to find an excuse to talk about the Hyde Park Arts Center. It's been around since the 30s. They've got camps for the summer, creativity camps. Check it all out on their website. But they've been doing a tremendous work for decades. So it'll be interesting to see how they change it up. Because that's people in that community in Hyde Park. I mean, they send their kids there for arts camp. Do you ever go to the arts camp, Pete?
No.
Arts camp guy?
Uh-uh.
I remember archery camp. Is that a thing? That was a thing?
You went to archery camp?
No, I went to the YMCA camp in Crystal Lake when I was young. And I just remember this one time it was archery. And I don't know why this just popped in my head, but just couldn't figure it out. Just boing.
Gina Davis.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember that I was trying really hard, you know, like I was pretty young, so there might have been tears in the eyes trying to figure it out, right? And thanks to a camp counselor, I actually turned around from being the worst to, you know, a C minus at it. But at least I was hitting
it. Yeah, you have improved.
So I remember they had like at the end of the day or of that session, they had an archery award or something like for the most improved. And I remember the kid next to me, and I didn't know any of the kids. And the kid next to me is like, yeah, I wonder who's going to get it. And they're like, Justin. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, it was telegraphed that much. And that stuck with me, the idea that everybody in the camp probably rolled their eyes at how bad I was at archery. And I had to tear up about it.
You think the tears were the influence of the
I think so.
It was rigged?
I agree. Let me just put it this way. I agree with the anonymous stranger, the other 9-year-old who was like, "Oh, brother. Okay, we get it. We get it. You overcame the obstacle. you deserve the medal."
You were 9?
I don't know what I was. Probably in that area, 10, 11, 9.
Just got done talking to a girl who started writing criticism
once
at
again,
4.
Once again, Pete. How many times do we have artists on the show or people were like, well, what'd you start? I started fooling around with the beat, the Tascam when I was 5. Oh, okay. I think I was slamming my metal truck into the wall when I was 5.
I think I was putting out my nose. I couldn't even do against the wall. I wasn't even smart enough to do that.
I just don't even when she's like, well, I started when I was 4.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. I guess, you know, I was just thinking my own son who's 9 now, if he became like a soccer phenom, you know, he took classes when he was 4, like little kickers, you know, in the park district where they just ran around and didn't really hit the ball.
Yeah.
So I guess you could arguably say, I started when I was 4.
Yeah, that's true.
But at the same time, no, not start when he's 4. The running around and running back to our seat to get another juice box does not constitute starting a profession at 4. I have a feeling writing theater reviews or at least talking them out or doing whatever you do at age 4, she was doing. I'm serious, man. I think we should – I'm going to call her mom, see if she will come in and be our regular download theater reviewer.
And then, like, Chris can just come in and, like, you know, Chris like, is, he just come in, like, last week where he just, like, talks for an hour about the comings and goings.
Pete, it's a what have you done for me lately business. You know, I cannot guarantee that Chris still has a spot. I mean, of all of his experience as a chief theater critic at the Chicago Tribune, you know, it's always about what's the last thing you did. And Ada Grade, 12 years old, I don't know, you know, so I don't want to talk out of turn. We're going to have to evaluate. We're going to really take a look at the books and, you know, take a look at synergy, you know, corporates, you know, togetherness, that kind of stuff.
We, She is only 12, so we do have to. We can't have her rolling in at 10 p.m. probably,
right,
to give us a theater review.
You're right. I would probably ask her to come in at noon and then stay all day. She'd have to get out of school. She's homeschooled, so she'd have to get out of school, and we would have to. Yeah, I mean, you're right, because we can't just have a freeloader who just comes in for one segment. I see where you're going with this, Pete. No, of course. We'd have to figure out how to do it, but we'll figure it out. She's great. The Hyde Park Arts Center Public School and camps, of course, this summer. All right, coming up, we play the worst. Ed Firm and Tim Chittister, two great Chicago improvisers, together on stage. They will be playing the worst tonight, promoting their show they got coming up here that's on stage right now. But how great. Two tremendous talents in studio. And the best part, there's prizes. You complain about the worst things in society for prizes. 312-981-7200. We'll play the worst after the news. All right. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time to play the worst. 312-981-7200. Yes, indeed. We are complaining about the worst things in society for prizes. Tonight, pizzas. We got pizzas to go around. And we've got great judges in studio tonight. Ed Firman, Tim Chittister, longtime improvisers here in Chicago. Their show, Early Bird Specials at the Annoyance at 8 o'clock on Sundays. Tim, Ed, good to see you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for
having us.
The audience,
they get a treat tonight. They get two guys, two witty guys in studio to judge the worst. We already got great ones coming in, and we'll get to them. The lines are lighting up. You, of course, know how to play this game. Just text 312-981-7200 or call and tell us what's the worst. Pete Zimmerman always starts us off, so why don't we do that tonight? Pete, how are you, my friend?
I am wonderful.
Do you like how I always act like this is the first time we talk in the show? We've been on the air for 3 hours now, and I'm like, oh, there's Pete Zimmerman.
Here I am.
Here you are. All right, Pete, start us off.
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When you're trying to log into a website and you can't do it, mm-hmm. and then that website doesn't tell you if you have the username or your password wrong.
Right.
You have to keep on trying. Yeah. Is the username my email?
Right.
Then tell me if
you're deducing whether or not. Yeah, you have to figure that out.
It's like 12 steps.
That's a straight up cable TV.
It's the worst.
Yeah, that's the worst. Website logins are the worst. Yeah. Right.
Oh, I agree. They're right up there for sure. Yeah.
I don't know if you'd commit to it being number one.
But, I don't like. I also don't like the time saving apps that takes you 20 minutes to figure out how to enter everything in your credit card to save the time eventually down the line.
Right. Oh man, yeah. And I hate that the fact when you change it, someone hacks into you and you change your password, then all of a sudden you have to remember that one, and I have like 8 versions of like the same one that's just slightly off, and I'm like, is it this one? And then you got to stop because you're going to get locked out.
It's always fun. The worst is when you have to go to a site. It always happens with like fantasy baseball where I'm like, all right, what period of my life did I actually where was I at when I started this site and what was my password? So I was like, what that cat that died.
It was clever at the time.
It
was witty.
It's always fun to go, oh, that one.
And why iTunes need a password? Right. Is someone gonna hack it? Someone wants to listen to my Judas Priest albums, go ahead. I don't care. Now I'm blocked out because I forgot it.
Yeah,
I
they mean, do the thing where if you mess around with it, they'll lock you out for a day or two, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an actual party game that I do not recommend. If you mess with someone's phone, login phone, when you're at the bar or whatever, you just put whatever random. If you do it a couple of times, it'll lock you off for an hour. If you do it a couple times more, it's a 24 hour. And I this happened to my wife one time. They're like, ha ha.
That's mean.
Yeah.
And these were friends of yours?
I don't know. Yeah. Not anymore, I guess.
I was going to say. Yeah.
You know, if you throw the phone on the ground, they got to get a whole new one. That's even funnier.
True, we can just keep going that way.
It's like 10 times it wipes your phone, right?
Right.
It just gets rid of everything.
So it's just practical jokes.
Just goofs and gags, getting your friends locked out.
Tim, what do you got for the worst?
You know what the worst is? I'll tell you what's the worst. Double-wide strollers on the bus. That's the worst. Let me tell you. Taking up those spots are reserved for handicapped people.
Yeah. Right.
Those kill me.
And they put the seats up, did the whole thing.
You know, they got a whole grocery store in them. Like there's a kid And then there's
or
like,
not.
Yeah, or not. Sometimes it's not. It's just like groceries or Pampers or whatever it is, you know, some sort of those. And I see them, they come in and they actually kick people out. They stare them down.
The worst is when someone in a wheelchair gets on the bus.
Yeah.
And they're already a double wide and there's this showdown about who deserves a space more. And there's no room for either. It's a disaster.
Oh, and when you get like two strollers and a wheelchair. I mean, it's high noon, man. It is high noon on there. Who's gonna blink first?
They should just have a hitch on the back of the bus. Everyone just hitch up to the back.
That's the way to do it.
If you can put a bike on the front, why can't you put a hitch on the back, man?
I think, hey, that's no complaints from me. All right, Ed, what do you got for the worst?
Two words, wet socks.
Oh.
No,
hate wet socks.
Yeah, no further explanation necessary.
Yeah, you know,
wet socks.
Yeah, I would put that right next to like wet bread. It's like the worst. Yeah,
wet bread. Especially if it's just water. If it's gravy on bread, that's one thing.
Yeah, gravy on bread's fine, but if it's just like soggy bread, like bread.
Or when pretzels get wet and they get really big in the bottom of the sink after a party, it's like, what's this worm monster on the bottom of the sink? Oh, it used to be a pretzel.
Oh, man.
312-981-7200, playing the worst tonight. It is true. You know, the addendum to the worst is when you take out, when your laundry is not, like the sock was in a ball. So you do the whole dryer, everything's in there, and then the sock is a little bit wet, and you're like, I'm going to go for it. You know, I need this sock. And you're just like, right at the tip, it's wet.
Because we know we all have those sock emergencies where we only have that one pair, and no other pair will do.
You're showing
and that's
the laziness,
why we washed
right?
it.
After the second time you wore it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right, let's go to some of these on the website here. 708 says, the worst are stores that charge extra for cold beer.
Never heard that.
That's a thing?
Cold ain't free in the summertime, man. In the winter, it should be. You know, you just open the back door, but that cold costs money, man.
I guess so. I mean, yeah, there is a refrigeration cost. Maybe it's a tax.
It's weird, but my dad had cold ain't free tattooed on his chest. You know, he grew up in West Virginia, and they take it seriously down there.
What was the font for that?
It was Comic Sans. I mean, he was
ahead of his time.
It was a joke.
All right, 312-981-7200. Tim Chittister, Ed Furman in studio. They got the show, the Early Bird Special at The Annoyance, Sunday nights at 8 o'clock. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll play more of The Worst. Stay with us. Playing The Worst tonight here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Tim Chittister, Ed Furman in studio. They are improvisers in Chicago. Their show, The Early Bird Special at The Annoyance, 8 p.m. on Sunday nights. When's that till? The end of the month?
Yes, sir.
You guys do a lot of shows. How do you shoot? Like, I mean, you guys have performed before. I mean, talk about what makes this show different than the millions of shows you guys do with other people, things like that.
This show is because we're older and we don't like to be out late anymore. You know, this is at 8 o'clock is actually like the after hours version of Early Bird
Special.
It's
the tip of the spear for us right now. It is really there.
We were hoping for a 6 o'clock slot. Ooh. We couldn't get one.
Yeah. Yeah, so
as the improvising community gets older, the 6 o'clocks are sought after.
Yeah.
Those are the
You really want that? Or, you know, we tell people it will give you a lot of laughs and get you home by 9. You know,
that's good.
Oh,
how far we've come.
Yeah, but it's also for the fact we did this. Is there so many great improvisers still here of our age who we've grown up with and performed? You've performed with over the years, and they don't have regular teams. And I'm like, it's a waste to just have them sitting on the sidelines. Like this guy to my left here. Yeah, Ed. I was like, it's a shame that Ed's not performing. Ed should be performing.
Yeah, absolutely. Every night. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what
we do.
You got
to suck it up and perform every night, Ed.
I do this once a week's killing me. I guess.
Right.
I got to get to the gym.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming down, taking naps before you came down. I appreciate it. All right. The worst, I run a catering restaurant business. This is 920. And at last event, I had ants crawling all over the dessert table.
Oh, that's bad.
Scott from Wisconsin.
Bless your heart for being like in the food, the service industry. That's got to be a lot of worsts in there.
Especially in the summertime catering. That's got to be real tough.
Yeah, right.
With the wind and all
outside
of that.
Outside kind of stuff. No. All right, I got a front runner for us tonight. You guys ready?
Okay.
This is a front runner. 815 already in the lead.
Ooh.
On lead for a pizza. Here we go. The worst is when your husband uses your deodorant and leaves a big hair on it.
You leave a big hair on anything in a house,
in general, in life, doesn't have to be in a house,
soap,
anywhere.
My wife and I don't even share a bathroom, let alone the deodorant.
I'm like,
I love that your husband's like, oh, I'm just out of deodorant. I'm going to get the secret. Yeah. I got to get
the secret works.
It's pH really? Balanced.
You know,
strong
I'm ready
for a man.
I'm ready to take on the day now. Look at me.
And I would at least check it for hairs.
Yeah,
afterwards.
Come on. That's like soap at the, you know, leave it how you found it. Yeah. Come on, man.
Leave it how you found it.
Yeah.
They're like, no, that's not mine. I don't know how it got there. The dog must have used it.
Yeah, that dog. Getting into your secret again.
708 says the worst is specialty ice cubes. You're going to charge extra for your special ice? There's nothing special about frozen water.
I would agree with that. Although,
are they doing? Are we missing this? First, it's charging for cold beer. Now it's charging for specialty ice.
First, it's over 80 degrees. First day, people go crazy cashing in on this heat wave.
Bunch of carpetbaggers trying to figure out how to make that money. Like, what can we do to get the rubes? Specialty ice. This one's shaped like Wrigley Field.
Is that a thing? Specialty ice?
Yeah. They have the big spheres. They melt slower. Yeah. Or at a more
but I get that if it's like in a drink at a bar.
Yeah.
Right? But you're not paying extra for that. You are, I guess, at the end when you pay $11 for. But I'm just saying, can you go to Jewel and there's specialty ice? No, it's just ice, right?
That's just ice.
Exactly.
Oh,
man.
Uh-oh. Now that we're. I'm trademarking as you speak.
We thought of the idea, specialty ice. This is our idea right in this room.
Specialty ice to go.
That's right. All right. 312 says the worst is when someone is humming in the seat behind you on the bus the whole ride home. You just want to turn around and grab that person by the neck and squeeze them like Homer does Bart.
Yeah, I would say any sort of noise. I would agree with that. Like when people are FaceTiming on the bus or they're listening to their music through their speaker on their phone. I'm like, nope.
Yeah, it's all bad.
The idea of FaceTiming in public. I understand the technology. It's just like the idea of phone in public. But the idea on a public bus or you see people FaceTiming on the street, like in front of a building. I'm always like, what are you doing?
That's why we have text messaging, right? Yeah. We're not animals. We don't have to FaceTime in public.
I just always feel like on the bus or the train, it's quiet time, people.
Right.
It's just people are trying to get somewhere, get to somewhere, from somewhere, especially like the morning, the rush hour. Ugh, they're all dead inside.
It's been a while since I've been on the Red Line. But the Red Line, as I remember, used to have the announcement that would say, no eating, drinking, or loud radio playing. Do they still do that now with headphones and text and things? Like, I got rid of that, right?
I've seen signs, but I have not heard
Nobody's
anything.
Coming out with the boombox anymore? That's a do-the-right-thing kind of moment? Like, that's not a thing anymore?
Radio Raheem's on the thing. It'll all come back.
It all comes back. What's old is new. All right, 847, the worst mail-in rebates. Yeah,
it's a scam. It's a scam. You're not going to mail it in. They're not going to pay you. Something's not going to happen.
I've just lowered the price.
Have you done it?
I've done it. I've done it. There's been some deals on like alcohol or something. I'm like, takes me 2 seconds. If I get $4 back, it's $4, man.
Well, I can't stand the rebates when they'll put a sticker on a item at the store, and they're saying it's $2.99. Then you get up there, and it's $5.99. They're like, oh, it's a rebate. Like that, I can't stand that. Like,
yes,
when
they put it right on, like you'll get this price when you get the.
It's like the gas price with car wash. Like that. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm glad you're so tricky. I'm glad you're so clever.
Bait and switch, man.
You're such a great businessman. You totally tricked us.
I like the in-store instant gratification where like. Oh,
yeah.
Buying a case of beer, you know, you can grab a pack of brats for $1 or, pizza for free.
Or the great cashier when they pull a sticker off of the package and they go, let's bring this up for you.
They're the real heroes.
Yeah, they're real heroes.
They
right?
are the frontline heroes. You just don't even know so many people.
815's got a lot tonight. We're getting some good stuff tonight. It's almost like the complaints tonight are eye-opening to me. The worst are fake service dogs.
Oh, yes.
I work in a restaurant. Oh. You wouldn't believe what people try to pull off. A dog sitting in the seat next to you in a booth is not a service dog.
No. Or on a plane.
I heard.
I'm sorry about
they
it.
They do that a lot on planes, like an emotional dog.
I heard of a service dog who was trained to sniff gluten. I kid you not.
At least they're trained to do something.
I
think this person's saying, you know, you bring your small little dog and you're like, oh, it's a service dog because I have PTSD or whatever. And you're like,
you
no,
pay
you just
$500 to a vet and he signs a piece of paper and you get a vest in the mail and then you get you take your dog everywhere.
That's what it feels like.
It's
it
medical
feels...
marijuana for pets.
Yes.
Right.
There is an emotional service dog mill that a doctor just signs forms like a pill mill. He's just, yeah, what do you need? Yeah.
Your nerves are shot. You need a dog. Here
yeah,
you go.
Here you go. Here's a chihuahua.
All right. We got more stuff here. 646 says the worst is an eyes wide open kisser.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of creepy.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Especially if you close your eyes and then you open and they're already open. Oh, that's some Jamie Gumm Silence of the Lambs stuff right there.
Unless you're kissing yourself in the mirror and you want to see what you look like when you're kissing.
You got to practice, man.
That's practice, though.
You got to look at your kiss face, man.
That's not kissing. That's just practice.
You know, you got to say, how are you landing it? Yeah. How are you getting in there? Is it bad?
Is it bad? All right. We get some good stuff there. All right. Eyes wide. That's a front runner, too. Eyes wide open kisser.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. That's weird.
Because it really does paint a picture.
That's not a second date.
How wide open are their eyes, too? That's the other thing. Are they, like, comically wide? Like, like saucers? Oh, man, that had weirded me out.
Yeah, I've been married too long to kiss. Like, it's just, that's gone.
Oh, yeah,
but
you're dead inside.
Yeah,
I get it. Yeah,
but
that
would be a good bit. That would be a good bit. If you were single on the scene, I would definitely be a wide-eyed kisser just to see how the reaction would be.
I think you need to implement that to get that romance started back up again.
Yeah. So I'll go home tonight and be like, hey. Let me try something.
My wife's listening at home.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Tim Chittister, Ed Furman in studio. They have the show Early Bird Special at The Annoyance Sunday nights at 8 o'clock. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200 is a phone number. It's still a wide open race here. I mean, we have some front runners.
Game.
Anybody's game, but there's some pizzas on the line. Oof. The worst. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all.
It's the worst. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200. 773 says, you know what's the worst? It is what it is. The phrase, it is what it is.
It's a totality.
It is. Tim Chittister, Ed Furman in studio, longtime improvisers here in town. They got a show at The Annoyance at 8 p.m. on Sundays, the Early Bird Special. They couldn't get to 6 o'clock. So now you got to take a nap. You got to take an afternoon nap. That's the problem.
I'm not a napper.
No, neither am I.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Just get up later?
You know, just white knuckle it. Try to get through it.
You know, it's that grit and determination that lies in the heart of
it. It's the Chicago spirit that we have inside of us that gets us through.
815 goes to the bathroom worsts, which is kind of it's a go-to here on the download. We get a lot of bathroom worsts.
There's
right,
a lot can go wrong in
there. Oh, yeah.
815 says the worst, using the restroom after a colleague and finding that the paper towels are out. So that's okay. The real worst, wondering if she was too lazy to refill them or if she didn't notice they were out. Because she didn't wash her hands. But she could easily just go on not dried.
See, that's a lot on you because that's a lot of speculation. You don't want to put that energy into it. Just I assume the best. Assume the best.
You assume they wash their hands. There's no towels. I'm no just going to air dry.
Yeah.
Right.
Just chill out, Columbo. It's okay.
I agree with this one. 847, the worst. Nashville probably going to the Stanley Cup Finals. That's true. I hate Nashville. I love the city, the Nashville Predators. Ugh.
If you can't grow your own ice, you shouldn't have a hockey team.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's a specialized thing.
I was just going to say. Specialty ice. That's specialty ice right there. They got that flown in.
773 says the worst is when your roommate opens up the cereal box upside down.
I don't know. Never had it happen to me. There's just so much. There's other people I don't eat cereal.
I mean, the bag can open on either end, so I mean that's just a stylistic choice.
You could glue it back up if you're really upset and then just open it properly.
Yeah, right. I guess you could just put some scotch tape on it. You'd be okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's all relative.
Yeah.
All right. 224, the worst is when they report on news that ticks are really bad this year.
Ugh.
But that this year is a tinier new tick as big as a dot, which causes neurological problems, memory loss, sometimes permanent. Come on.
I don't need a super tick.
It's the last thing we need.
Yeah, we don't need super day and age.
There's a lot going on in the world.
Do they only go on really small dogs?
Yeah.
I think that might be, yeah.
I know. I will say, I know a friend of ours who got Lyme disease from a tick, and now she used to be scared of flying. Now she's totally cool with it. Something changed in her chemistry because of this.
She's part tick now. That's good. Ticks don't have fear.
I didn't want to put that out live. It could be.
Another one here, 630, says, same concept. The worst is washing your hands after doing your business in a public restroom and realizing the guy who just walked out of the same restroom didn't wash his hands, and now you have to grab the same door handle he used. Oof.
Ooh. They usually open out. A good kick.
A lot of times now they have that trash can right next to the door, though, so you can grab a piece of paper to open it up.
Or you got elbows, things like that. There's a lot you can do there. 630, the worst, accumulating 5 free McCafe drinks on the McDonald's app, and then the app doesn't work, and the McDonald's won't do anything about it.
What do you expect them to do?
Ugh.
They're McDonald's. It's an app. It's McCafe's.
Just go to Oak Brook.
They'll stand in line.
That's what you got to do,
Just straight to Oak Brook, and they will help you out. I love that the person not only has so many McCafe's, but they have it. I didn't even know there was an app.
Yeah.
Is it a special McCafe app, or is it a McDonald's app that has a McCafe sub app?
And the idea would be that, like, you scan it, right, or something like that, and then it would say, you've got 5 free. But then, of course, it breaks on the fourth one.
Yeah. You know what always works? Punch cards.
Yeah, right.
Man, let's bring those back.
I've got, like, 9 of them. I just keep getting the same one over and over from Dunkin' Donuts or whatever. It's the same one. I'm like, I'll get a new one.
Dunkin' hasn't upped their game with their app.
They probably do an app, too. I'm just behind the game.
You know, paper always.
Once the sub sandwich shop goes to an app, no good. Right? That's when society has really turned.
Sad but true, yeah. And by the way, you notice how Dunkin' Donuts is downplaying the donuts these days?
Yeah, they coffee, really are.
Yeah, coffee sandwiches.
I just feel bad for the people who make punch holers. Like that's a business that's going to go downhill. Like that's not a growth market anymore.
It's not. No.
No.
For a while there, everyone had their own unique shape, so you couldn't just
Right?
Yeah.
And now they're just sitting there sadly, you know, the heart-shaped punches.
Do you think they're still holding on? You think they're like, a business is down 600%, but if we could just a second quarter.
I'm sure they're like, it's cyclical. It's going to come back, and it's just going to come back around. Right. It's going to be a Christmas gift. The millennials will love it.
They probably slowed down manufacturing, but the warehouses are full and ready to go.
I'll tell you, if they promote those to millennials as like stress relievers, it'll go through the roof. Go through the roof.
Or, I mean, there's other, maybe they'd be bedazzlers or something like that. You know, like something like, I don't know, put some glue in there. I don't know if that's there's a bedazzler already, right? So, I don't know.
Double bedazzed.
The worst is when you get an itch in a place on your back that's out of reach for your scratch, and there's no one around to scratch, so you have to rub a wall with your back to get relief.
We're all pretty much animals, so yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
bad.
Yeah.
It's sad, too.
It is.
A lot, yeah.
I mean, especially for me, because I'm, like, super hairy, so I do look like a bear if I'm doing like that. You know, I'm just trying to get that spot against a wall.
And you're audible. You're like,
Yeah, exactly.
Right. 773, the worst is when you make pancakes only to realize you have no syrup.
Ugh.
Oh, you got to check. How could you?
Yeah, that's a first thing. Man. First thing you check.
Yeah.
You know, batter, syrup. There's how much more do you need? Like.
I don't know. I would make a simple caramel.
Right?
Make a simple syrup or some butter or something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A roux of some sort.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You would go that way? You're good enough around the...
I'd figure something out.
The saucepan?
I'd figure out the saucepans I got. Yeah.
He's quite the MacGyver in the kitchen.
I love it. All right. Yeah. It's good to know. All right. 312-981-7200. Now, it's funny. The... 847 says the worst is biting a canker sore.
Oh.
Over and over and again.
Oh.
And I only say that because now here comes the run on all the bathroom worsts.
All right.
Once you say the worst is a bathroom related worst, they all come out. And we're just going to skip that chapter.
Okay.
Okay.
If that works for you guys.
Sure.
630 says it's on the Mickey D's app.
Oh, okay.
Just lets you guys know.
Oh, okay. So it's a Mickey D app.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And then, all right, where is this one I saw? Just sorry, just missed it. I know there's some. The worst is when, did I read this one? Okay, 312. The worst is when you buy a new gadget and then you decide to return it, but then you can't pack it up properly. There's always something bulging in the package no matter what. That's so true. Like if you buy a gadget and you try to return it and you try to package it back up, it's never going to work.
It's impossible. There's like some alternate physics they use when they package that stuff.
Yeah.
And somehow there's more mass when you open the box than the box can contain.
They probably do it on purpose. They're like, yeah, we're going to do this so there's no physical way to repackage it so you can't bring it back.
Or the packagers take such pride in their work, they don't want, you know, you think anyone could pack like this?
Oh, they could be professionals, right? Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Don and Barry at the package store? Oh, they're like super proud.
Let's go to Mary. Mary's on the line. Mary, what's the worst, Mary?
When somebody wants you to make your specialty item, you're really happy about it, and you see if you had an ad for the main ingredient in the flyer, so you go to the store, and a sale ended yesterday.
The sale ended yesterday.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
Yeah.
I just feel like that's all stores. The sale ended yesterday is the name of my store that I would put out a new retail store right now. Sale ended yesterday.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. Thanks, Mary.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. That's a good one.
Yeah.
The sale ended yesterday.
And you're trying to do something nice for someone else, too.
Yeah, you're making your specialty. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot going into that one.
Maybe extend that one more day, that sale. That's for someone else.
That's when that brave cashier comes in.
You know what? That's usually, yesterday it ended, but let me do this.
Mm-hmm. Those are the real heroes.
The heroes. 312-981-7200. Tim Chittister, Ed Furman in studio. They are improvising in town doing the early bird special at the Annoyance Theater up on Belmont, 8 o'clock on Sundays. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll give you the top two. I got two pizzas to give away tonight.
Ooh,
sounds great.
And so it's still time to get in. It's not. I don't think it's a done deal.
It's pizza, people.
I don't want to make it a big deal.
We don't have anything that's unbeatable.
Right. So right now would be a time to swoop in.
Oh, swoop.
It's the worst. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tim Chittister, Ed Furman in studio. You see them at the Early Bird Special improvising at the Annoyance Theater on Sunday nights, 8 o'clock. All right. 312-981-7200. Like we said, there's an opportunity to swoop.
Swoop.
309 says, absolute worst is when you elect someone that promised to make America great again. Okay.
All right.
All right. 312 has got a good one. The worst is when you ask someone, how you doing? And then they tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Come on.
No, that's not the long answer. That's for other times, man.
There's great. There's fine. That's about it.
Yeah. That's your wheelhouse right there.
Yeah.
All right. 847. The worst is when you go to the dentist to get a root canal, and then the dentist seals up the tooth, takes an x-ray, and says, uh-oh, the post bent. That's the first time that's happened. That's 1 in 1,000.
Oh, no.
Ooh,
that sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Post bent.
Yeah. The worst will bring out medical accidents a lot. That's a part of this game that
bathroom,
I love.
Bathroom joke and medical accidents.
Yeah, I get a lot of that. And then once in a while, people will text in saying, the worst is, getting cancer or something like that.
Yeah,
and you're like, it is the worst. Yeah,
yes.
that's no doubt.
Of course it is.
No doubt.
Of course it is.
I hear it. 630 says, the worst is thinking you got a 10 a.m. tee time at Arrowhead Golf Club in Wheaton, only to find your online sign-up was made at a club with the same name in Erie, New York.
I blame Wheaton. Yeah. Straight up, I'm just blaming Wheaton on that.
Couldn't the website be like, arrowheadwheaton.com?
Right. New York.
847, the worst is being at a party with kids. The parents aren't paying attention. The kids are picking their noses and double dipping. Yuck.
Yep. Yeah,
that's bad. That's bad.
You got to have all the low snacks low, and then the high snacks for the
good snacks.
It's really just about where you put the snacks.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's just they go free range. They just let them fly. And as somebody without kids, as Ed is as well, as far as I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when you go to a party and the kids are there, you just automatically know what's up.
Don't trust anything. Don't touch anything.
That's the one where you're like, ugh.
Come full.
Yep.
815, when you're in your car, you're picking your nose, then realize the car next to you is watching. It's a classic.
Oh.
Yeah.
630 continues to tell us about what happened with their McDonald's, McCafe app. Very specific.
These problems are real. The struggle is real.
What's bad? Okay, is when you're so into playing a video game. Let me see if I have this right. Your girlfriend was painting your toenails the whole time.
Again, that's on you, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Live with it. That's part of the battle.
You let your guard down in real life because you're killing people.
Situational awareness, man. You got to have it when you're in the game and in the house.
630, the worst is thinking it's Friday, but it's only Tuesday. Yeah, that is the worst.
That's
pretty bad.
Yeah, that is.
815 says the worst is getting a $5 gift card when $500 was promised.
Oh.
What? What is that? Hey, you get a $500 gift card. First of all, that's a huge gift card.
That's a huge gift card.
Yeah, that is
I think
that's
probably on them. Again, if they thought they were getting a $500 gift card, my guess is it probably was five all along.
Was it spoken? Was it written about? Right. Yeah, like, I mean, why would someone tell you they were giving you a $500 gift card?
And then that doesn't happen every day. I mean, that's a special, the worst.
And I mean, is it to McDonald's to get some McCafe? Because then your troubles are taken care of, man.
It's a lot of McCafes.
Or is it for a Toyota? Like, oh, I got 500. Oh, no, I got $5 off this. $5.
Oh, wait. The sale was yesterday on Toyotas? Oh, man.
The worst is crossing the line between talking to yourself and coming across as bat nuts crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I live alone, and I'm by myself a lot, so it can veer that way.
I'm good there. Yeah. I'm good at that spot.
Yeah.
You're okay, though. You're not, but you don't ever worry about what people think of you on the sidewalk if you're talking to yourself, do you?
I don't, it's not in the
sidewalk.
Oh, I came
across crazy.
Yeah. It's more times like when I'm at home where you're like, get it together, you know? like, come on.
Looking in the mirror. Come on, Tim.
You know, I'm trying to kiss myself open-eyed, and I'm like, it's not working.
All right, 815 says the worst is when you're watching a sitcom on the Laugh Channel. Okay. And you get in a good, happy mood, and then the Save the Pets commercial comes on showing a shaking, starving dog.
Yeah. Yeah,
no.
I hate that.
That's the same I'll say for Facebook, too. I was scrolling through, and then someone put a picture of, like, someone cut the ears off a dog, and I was like, no! No, you do
no,
not
you
put
do
that
not.
On. Why I just saw that. Why did you make me see that?
Right. Do you think I do that?
Yeah.
Do you think I think that's okay, or I was unaware of animal abuse?
I don't need to see. It was horrible. And see, now I'm seeing it again, and I'm like,
The descriptor. Okay. 815 says, McCafe issues. I work in a restaurant. 15-year-old kids these days can't even speak to you because they're so socially awkward.
I guess what a lot of this comes down to is what really is the worst is people.
Yeah, they are the worst.
Really, we as a society.
Summed it all up, right?
Yeah.
Well, MB says the worst is changing your tire for the first time only to realize you have locks on your rims and no keys. Is that a thing? We're learning a lot.
Because people steal because they're the worst.
They're the worst.
Bukowski
but at least
he
got sweet rims.
Yeah. Ed Furman, Tim Chittister in studio. Okay, so we've got two pizzas to give away. Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Ooh. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish.
Yes,
find
it
one
is.
Of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnati's.com. We've got two of them. So we've got two winners. I don't think that any of the stuff that came in the last 10 minutes beats what we have, but they were great.
No swooping.
But it was close.
There were some good ones.
It was gliding.
No swoop. More of a glide.
All right, second place is going to get 815. Is the worst is when your husband uses your deodorant and leaves a big hair on it.
Inconsiderate.
Mm-mm.
And the other one tonight, 646, the worst is an eyes wide open kisser.
Ugh.
Yeah.
push that person away and have some pizza.
Or ask more questions.
Yeah,
really,
exactly.
You could do both. At that point, I'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Is this a new relationship or an old one, too?
I'm
that really,
intrigued.
Yeah.
I don't think those new ones would go very far.
No.
An open-eyed kiss.
I don't know. I would be like, I want to know more about you. You are challenging society. Tim Chittister, Ed Furman, see him on stage at the Annoyance Theater, 8 o'clock on Sundays at the Early Bird Special. Of course, the Annoyance up on Belmont, Belmont and Clark. You guys, great to see you. Thanks for coming in, playing the worst.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, man.